content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Sonia Usach-Kuhn of the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Community Connections. Every month I will introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. My guests today are Matthew Bazemore and Chris Skidmore. Let me tell you a little bit about Matthew. Matthew Bazemore was born on December 7th, 2000. He, his parents, Donna and Stephen, and sister Brittany, are from Conway, North Carolina. Other than sports and music, his family is what Matthew cherishes the most. Growing up, hobbies such as baseball and basketball were his favorite things to do after school. When pitching automatic curveballs with his left hand, you could easily tell Matthew loved the game by his performance on the field. In 2010 and 2011, he was the all-star pitcher for the Northampton County Recreation League. No matter if Matthew won or lost, he was always very humble and proud to have the opportunity to represent his county. In late September of 2011, Matthew began to lose his sight. He was bumping into walls, struggling to watch TV, and was not going outside to shoot hoops after school. All Matthew was doing was sleeping. His family was very concerned and confused. His mother took him to King's Daughters Hospital in Norfolk, Virginia, where Matthew was diagnosed with a large brain tumor called pilocytic astrocytoma, located on his pituitary gland, which wrapped around his optic nerve. King's Daughters then transported Matthew to Charlottesville, Virginia, where he underwent a 10-hour brain surgery procedure to remove half of the tumor. It was the most frightening experience he and his family had ever faced. Through it all, Matthew kept his faith and believed that everything was going to be all right. Fortunately, the surgery was successful. 14 days later, Matthew came home to begin his recovery. This tragedy and the hard times it caused, however, was not over. Just as his eyesight was beginning to return, he began losing his vision again. And Matthew then went to Duke, where he found out that the other half of the brain tumor had relocated itself back around his optic nerve. Matthew began chemotherapy. Over the course of 4 years, utilizing different types of treatment, his brain tumor shrunk from the size of a lime to the size of a dime. Currently, Matthew can only see a little light perception, shapes, shadows, and a few colors. In 2015, Matthew attended the Governor Moorhead School in Raleigh, North Carolina, where he had access to more resources than in his hometown school. His independence and love of sports were back in his life. He traveled to different schools for the blind in other states to play goalball and track. He played the trumpet at music festivals. In June of 2019, Matthew graduated from the Governor Moorhead School with a great plan for his career in mind. Matthew is now living in Raleigh on his own, working at LCI Industries in Durham. In January 2020, he plans to extend his education at Wake Tech Community College, where he will be majoring in communication classes to fulfill his dream of becoming a sports commentator. Despite all the hard times and challenges, Matthew and his family remained optimistic. And now here's a little bit about our other guest today, Chris Skidmore. Chris is originally from High Point, North Carolina. He is legally blind, thanks to a disease called Knobloch syndrome. Chris studied English and communications at High Point University with a focus on broadcasting. He spent 10 years working for several radio stations in the Triad as an on-air personality. In 2007, he and his wife, Rivka, and their daughter moved to Raleigh, where he began volunteering at TRRS, now known as North Carolina Reading Service, as a soundboard engineer, and later as the host for Tech Tips. Tech Tips is a half-hour monthly program dealing with assistive technology for the visually impaired. In 2013, TRRS, Triangle Radio Reading Service, entered into a partnership with the Governor Moorhead School in Raleigh and began a new program called T3, Teens, Tools, Talent, Angle on Broadcasting Programs. The school identifies high school-aged students with an interest in broadcasting. The students then receive hands-on training on the equipment here at North Carolina Reading Service. The goal is to introduce the selected students to the world of broadcast radio, giving them an idea of what the industry is like, which can help them decide whether or not it's something they would like to pursue. They are now in the sixth year of the program. Chris serves as program director and teacher. So glad to have you both with us on Community Connections.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to be here.
Well, it's quite a story you two have. The courage you've put forth to have made independent lives despite your eyesight challenges is inspirational. Matthew, can you please speak about where and how you learned to be a blind person doing activities of daily life like dressing and eating that sighted folks take for granted?
Well, it all began, you know, it all starts with, you know, my mom and my parents being, treating me the same as I was before I lost my sight. I had to learn things on my own. Of course, they would assist me with a few things, but they didn't treat me any different, and that took me a long ways. That helped me be where I am today, helped me adapt easier, and it helped me learn things about being blind that I may not have known if someone was doing everything for me.
Okay. I'm taking it that you have some great parents and a terrific sister.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
So, Chris, when you were diagnosed, what impact did it have as head of household in your family?
Well, first of all, I am not the head of household in my family. So from that standpoint, it didn't affect me at all. It hasn't affected me, you know, hardly any. The only thing I have to do is the same things that everybody else does when you're running a house. And I just do it a little bit slower. I do it a little bit different using assistive technology and, a very understanding wife and family.
Well, that's wonderful. How old was your daughter when this happened?
When what happened?
When the Knobloch's disease.
Well, I've always had bad eyesight, so she's always known that Daddy has really bad eyes. And so that part of it hasn't changed. It's just that for my entire life, I was told I had retinitis pigmentosa because in 1971, that was the way it presented because we didn't know about gene therapy back then. And earlier this year, I took genetic testing and learned that through that, what I actually had was the Knobloch syndrome because I hit pretty much all of the markers and attributes that somebody with Knobloch has.
And so is that considered rare?
I am the 32nd documented case of Knobloch syndrome since 1971.
And is that the United States?
No, that's the world.
That's the world.
Wow.
So that tells you how rare it is.
Certainly.
Yeah, and there's 32 documented cases. It's estimated there might be 50 people worldwide that have it.
Okay, let me turn back to you now, Matthew. Tell me and our listening audience how you were selected to attend the Governor Moorhead School. And then would you describe some of the classes and something about your teachers?
Before I started back school in public school in Conway, North Carolina, it was hard for me. I was the only blind student there. And that was very difficult. The teachers has never worked with a blind student before, and I had to help them learn things just as much as they had to help me learn things. And I was trying to be understanding, but after a while, the closer I got to high school, I knew I had to have something done. I had to have more help. So we've heard about the Golden Boy School before when I was in seventh grade, but I just didn't. We just put it aside, and one day something went on at school in eighth grade, and I had enough of it. And that's when my mom finally decided that going to the Governor Moore School for the Blind would be a benefit for me. So it was just experiences that blind people could go through at a public school that doesn't provide what a blind student may need as much as a blind school could. The classes at GMS were very helpful for me and all the other students because everything you needed was there. Braille, one-on-one learning, other students that understood your situation. It was just great all put together. And the teachers, they're always understanding. They want to help you. And they don't baby step you a lot. And the teachers are just great there, and I appreciate them so much.
Anyone in particular?
Brian Duffy.
Brian Duffy?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. That was a three-part question, and I have one for you, Chris. What was special about Matthew as a student? You were his teacher, yes?
Yeah, 2 years?
2 years.
Was it two or three?
It was three.
Oh, okay. Well, yep. I'm old.
Time flies.
Well, I'm old and I can't remember, so.
Okay. So that's part one. What was it special about Matthew as a student? What do you think the most valuable thing is that you taught him? And what did you learn?
So one of the first things I noticed about Matthew is that, first of all, he is snarky and sarcastic like me, which helped us get along really well. But from the, you know, strictly a student standpoint, student-teacher standpoint, he was very well-motivated to do the work, which I found refreshing. He also seemed to grasp the concepts of what we were talking about a lot better than some of the other students in his particular classes. And you know, every time I'd give him or give the class something to do, he would come back and say, okay, what can I do now? How's this? And to me, that spoke volumes. And then what was the second one?
The most valuable thing you taught him, and then what did you learn?
Honestly, I don't know what the most valuable thing is I taught him. He would have to, you know, Matthew would have to answer that.
I'll ask him.
I taught him as much as I could, and, you know, to me, it's all valuable. But, you know, to him, what I think is valuable may not be valuable to him, and vice versa. So, you know, that's really a question for him to answer. And then as far as what did I learn from teaching Matthew, I learned that there are still some students out there and teenagers in general who have a strong drive and strong ambition and want to do well and succeed.
That's good to hear. Despite all the horrible shootings we hear, there was another one in California today.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's just sad. It's wonderful that you found people who were motivated and wanted to learn, especially with their challenges. So what did you learn especially from Chris?
Well, so from a broadcasting standpoint, I would say the one thing I learned from him was, and I quote, it's not rocket science.
You know, he told us it's radio. It's not rocket science.
Exactly. He told us that many times before. I'm like, dude, I was I would come up to him and be like, dude, I just keep stuttering. I don't know what to say. He's like, hey, dude. I'll be like, what? It's radio, not rocket science. Just calm down. Take a breather.
If you mess up in radio, nobody dies.
Yes. And that's one thing I learned, and that took me a long ways with broadcasting. And it seems so inconvenient, but it took me a long ways as far as a mental motivation for me. But as for life, you know, Chris, I look up to him a lot. You know, he lets me know that a blind person can do broadcasting, even despite all the technology and not being able to read Braille, because I can't read Braille that well either. But I look up to Chris, and I think he knows that. If he doesn't, that's good.
I just question me as one of your role models.
Well, I would have to say that you look very, very comfortable and very fine behind the microphone.
Thank you.
Yes, you do. And so do you, my friend.
Well, thank you much.
Okay. Well, I have to say, after all this discussion about teaching and learning, the two of you bring the truth to that famous saying, when the pupil is ready, the teacher will come. Obviously, you were ready. Your mom realized you belonged in another setting. And there was Chris,
yes,
ready to help you. So I'd like to chat a little bit now about your desire to become a sports commentator. What about that would you like to share?
Well, as you heard in when Miss Sonia was saying my
bio.
My bio, yes. Sports, it means a lot to me. Rather, if it's playing sports, listening to sports, anything involving sports, I love it. And being able to be on TV or radio and talk about what the player just did or what the player just didn't do, mm-hmm, I would love to do that. I love to talk, and I think that fits in very well. And I love to listen to the commentators when I watch NFL. Every week, I love to listen to them make comments and say things that a lot of people don't really take notice because they're just focused on the visual standpoint of what they're seeing on the field. But I got to listen to what I hear, and that means a lot to me. And I would just love to keep that going for the ones that do follow the game by hearing.
Oh, that's really interesting. Okay. And I'm taking it that your favorite sport is football?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Now, you guys said what you're not and what you are. I am more girly than sports, but I have a son who helped me with the next few questions. He is very into sports, especially baseball, so he helped me form these next few questions. So here we go, Chris. I have a few famous sportscaster names to toss, did you get it? Toss out to you.
That's very punny.
Yes.
pun intended. So please comment on the ones you may be familiar with. And I'm going to start with football. So there were three that I'm going to mention now. Howard Cosell, Terry Bradshaw, and Ian Eagle. Do you know those names?
I know two of them.
Is this just for Chris or me too?
Both of you.
I'll let you go first.
I know Howard Cosell. He was like broadcast from the 60s and the 80s, I believe, or 70s and 80s.
Yeah, 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah, I think.
And he had that style that you had to listen to him because everything was phenomenal.
Yes, and that, and he would even admit that he was cocky. Is that true? I mean, I
never met him. I would certainly see that from the way he presented himself on air.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me.
He called himself arrogant, and that's what, wow.
You know, if if that's your shtick,
yeah,
go for it.
That was the attitude of him.
Yes.
I remember him.
Yeah.
I remember the name of Terry Bradshaw, but I don't know much about him.
I know he played football for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and He is the fox for Sunday Night Football.
So, yeah, he was a quarterback for the Steelers when I was a kid. So I remember him, but I remember, like you, that he played for the Steelers.
Yeah.
But that's about it. He's also dabbled in a couple of movies. He was in Cannonball Run. And if you remember Smokey and the Bandit, it was the same idea. But he was in Cannonball Run. He was in a couple other movies that their names escape me right now. But he is kind of I would say almost a polar opposite of Howard Cosell.
Yeah.
Because Terry is very outgoing, is the way he presents himself on the air. He's very outgoing, very funny, doesn't take anything seriously, I think, including himself, which I think is that's a very good thing in somebody, I think. As for the third guy you mentioned, Ian Eagle, no clue.
I don't know him either.
Well, then let's move on.
Okay.
Okay.
That was easy.
How about some of these other legends? And now I'm going to baseball, because that I know a little bit about, only because my son taught me. Lindsey Nelson, Ralph Kiner, and Bob Murphy. They were for the Mets. Marv Albert, the voice of the Knicks. Warner Wolf, Monday Night Baseball. And what did he used to say? Let's go to the videotape, right?
Yes, and okay. He said the foul pole is the fair pole.
Okay.
That's what he also said.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, the foul pole is the fair pole.
Yep, because if you hear it, if you hear a ding, it's fair.
Yep.
So what about the three Mets guys?
Lindsey Nelson.
I'm a Cubs fan. I know nothing about the Mets other than I don't like them.
What's my son going to say when he hears this?
I'm sure he's heard it before.
Yeah, that's not new to him. Lindsey Nelson sounds so familiar.
Not with me.
Okay, well,
with me.
The three of those guys, I used to hear them when I would watch baseball with my son. How about Marv Albert?
I know the name, and I think for a while he also worked for ESPN as well.
Yeah.
I think he had a brother, too.
Could have been,
another Albert, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Warner Wolf. He was pretty famous too.
Yeah,
yeah. He always said when he was broadcasting and he would tell you something and he wanted you to see it, he would say to the audience or his engineer, "Let's go to the videotape."
Yeah, I know him. Well, I don't know him, but I've heard of him.
Okay, do you have a favorite?
Probably Terry Bradshaw.
Aside from the ones that I just mentioned, your own favorite.
Hmm.
Anybody now that you kind of look up to?
Not really a commentator, but he does do sports radio. It's David Glenn. Really look up to him a lot.
Okay.
All righty.
Now me?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, I'm a Cubs fan, bless my heart. And, you know, I really like listening to the Cubs TV announcers, Lynn Casper and Jim Deshaies. And Jim Deshaies was a pitcher for the Astros before he retired from baseball and got in on the TV side of things. But as far as from people in the past, I used to, when I followed college basketball, I loved listening or watching games that Dick Vitale was calling, because it's dynamite, baby. and it was a blast to listen to somebody or to watch a game and listen to a commentator who was as excited about something happening as the person watching the game on TV could be. And that's what I think is cool. And you've got some broadcasters in all sports who call all sports, and you've got some who are just there to call the game and they're not really emotionally involved in it. But then you've got other guys, especially when they're the team's play-by-play guy for their radio or TV side, and they love the team, they love what they do, and they are as emotional about it as you are.
Yeah, and that makes it exciting for me too. You know, that makes the listener or the watcher excited about it too.
Yeah.
I think that the people that I mentioned that you guys commented on all had personalities.
Yeah.
And that's what catches the audience.
And Lindsey Nelson, it came back to me. He did college football.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did college football.
Okay. So I will say that Chris, right here at North Carolina Reading Service, is my trusted engineer for Community Connections. And I now have an opportunity to thank him publicly. So what else do you do around here?
You covered a lot of it already.
Okay.
So I engineer this program. I engineer a couple of the other programs, the interview type shows. I've been engineering legal matters for a while now. And then I periodically will go in the live studio and help out in there if they need somebody to run the board. And then in addition to all my duties as T3, program manager and teacher, I host Tech Tips once a month for assistive technology, and I do that program all at home. I put it together at home, and I bring it here and shove it into the system, and that's how it gets on the air here. And then I also help with the website for us as well.
That's quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I am going to ask Matthew to comment on the incredible technology available to blind people now. What devices do you use that help you, Matthew?
Although there's numerous types of technology out there, like the Braille display and the note taker, all of those, I only use the laptop and iPhone. Maybe when I start school, I'm going to start using a Braille display or a note taker or a Victor reader. But as of right now, a laptop and iPhone does for me, using JAWS, that's a screen reader, or NVDA, that's another screen reader. On my laptop.
That's fantastic. It's quite amazing how technology can help so many people. I'm happy that it's there for people who need it and can use it. So we're going to wrap up the session right now. So first I'd like to thank you both for sharing your incredible stories. And Matthew, if you would just comment right now, could you offer some advice? What would you say to a person who has been diagnosed blind, a new person?
Well, I think I would have to say that it's not as hard as it may seem. If you think about being blind, it sounds tragic, and it can be. But being blind itself, living being while blind, isn't as hard as it seems. It's hard as you make it. It can be easy as you make it. So if you have a positive mindset, if you have a negative mindset, that's where it's going to be. And me, myself, I try to have a positive outlook. I'm not going to roll in the mud. Yes.
That's the key. Thank you for spending this last half hour with me and Community Connections. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, NorthCarolinaReadingService.org. If you have any comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Community Connections, please call 919-832-5138.